Interview with Annette Arnold and Kathy Wilde, the filmmakers of the documentary Rose Gaffney, the Belle of Bodega Bay. Recorded January 13, 2005. Interviewed for Sonoma County Museum by Sue Doherty for an exhibition entitled Secrets, Shadows, and Myths, 150 Years of Sonoma Stories. The Sonoma County Museum celebrates its 20th anniversary in March 2005 with an exhibition that delves into the museum's permanent collection of photographs and oral histories, along with selected art and artifacts, to reveal Sonoma stories, both well-known and unknown. Recently recorded oral histories, such as this one, will comprise a portion of the exhibit. Here to tell us the story of Rose Gaffney, who is best known as the 66-year-old who helped lead the opposition against PG&E's proposed nuclear power plant in Bodega Bay in the early 1960s, are documentary filmmakers Annette Arnold and Kathy Wilde.
So we're going to talk to you about Rose Gaffney, who was a woman who came to California and Bodega Bay around 1911. And she got here, her family were Polish immigrants who went to Canada, and then they rode the rails down through California and arrived in the Bodega Bay area. And as a young girl, Rose Gaffney went to work as a maid for the two gentlemen, the two Gaffney brothers, who owned a big portion of the middle portion of Bodega Head, about 600 acres out there. So when Rose arrived at Bodega Bay, she started working for the Gaffney brothers. And at one point, there was a hired hand who came out there. His name was Walsh. And she and he got married and went off to live in Windsor. And she left Bodega Head for a few years. And when she came back, she was without a husband and had a daughter with her. And she started working again as a maid for the Gaffney brothers. And at one point, she was scheduled to get married to a Gaffney. And the day before the wedding, he was shot in a barroom brawl in Bodega.
And died.
Rose was pregnant at the time. And so the other Gaffney, the older brother,
Bill... The wedding went ahead the next day.
And the older brother, Bill Gaffney, married her. And she was very much in love with him. They were together until he died in 1941. And even though there was a big age difference between the two, she really had a lot of respect and kindness towards him. And he was, I think of all the people we interviewed, they said he was the only one who could in any way influence her or calm her down.
After he died, there was a poignant story that one lady said. What was her name?
Doris Mann.
Doris Mann. She also went out and lived on the property while Rose was still alive. And Rose gave her advice of how to be a farm wife out there on the property. But she took his hat.
Rose
and,
did.
Yes, Rose took his hat and things, artifacts of his, and she took them out and she burned them. And she let him go. You know, what were you going to do? Were you going to moan over him, or were you going to let it go and go on with life? And she was a fighter, and that's what she did. You know, she let her love stand.
So Rose and her love, who lived out on Bodega Head, one of the few families that have actually had homes out there. There have only been three since the Smiths brothers sold it in the late 1860s. There have been three families that have had property out there. And on the head was the Stroh family, and then the Gaffneys had the middle portion, and the portion closest to the mainland was owned by the Keys. And Rose and her husband, Bill Gaffney, had a dairy farm. They had some cows out there, and they would milk the cows and row them across Bodega Bay in a canoe.
The milk. Not the cows.
Row the milk across in a canoe and deliver it to the other side of the bay. And because Bodega Head's a very scrappy area, there's not a lot that grows out there, it was a really tough existence. And so that's how she made her money up until the early 40s, was from the dairy cow milk that she sold.
How much land was that now?
Originally, the Gaffneys had about 600 acres. And in the 60s, PG&E, when they wanted to build a power plant, was interested in over 400 acres that they wanted. And at a later point, they came back and said that they didn't actually need all that property, and they did condemn her land for a total of 69 acres, which she had to sell against her mighty will.
And condemn property?
Well, it's eminent domain. They're going to do something that will be for the public good. But PG&E is not a federally funded company. It's the largest independently owned power company on the planet. So I mean, that somehow or another they got jurisdiction to do this.
So Rose and her husband lived out at Bodega Head, scrapping by an existence. They weren't too well off, and she was she was called by the Los Angeles Times the mother of ecology. And part of the reason for that is she literally would go out and comb the beaches every day of her life, walking up and down, and she loved to find Indian artifacts, for which she became very well known and amassed a huge collection. And she knew all about, So after Rose's husband passed away, and she decided to move to the Salmon Creek, which is a little bit north of Bodega Bay, and she lived there for the rest of her life. But she kept the property out at Bodega Head and leased it in the late 40s to the Manns, who were local sheep ranchers. And she worked with them and the curtain story is what I was thinking of when Doris was going to bite in them. I won't go into them. So she comes up to Salmon Creek in the late 40s, where she now moves to, and she is definitely still a woman who every day was outside and part of the earth and enjoyed just being a part of the local scenery. The people locally were kind of terrified of her. She was a huge woman, like over 6 feet tall, and a very big voice, and very loud and opinionated, and telling people exactly what she thought. And even though she never went beyond the eighth grade, she had a really an amazing collection of knowledge that she had amassed for her life. And one of the stories that is in one of the letters that I read was she would go to church with her family and take the nickel that she was supposed to put in the collection plate and go down and buy a newspaper and sit in the woods and read it from front to back so that she could learn more things. And at her house that we went to do an interview at, she had an interesting collection of books ranging from mineralogy to Indian artifacts to nuclear power to the roses and flora and fauna of the area. And she, at one point...
State history.
She was very knowledgeable. And it's interesting because she didn't go that far in school. Speaking of her Indian collection, it was something that was very important to her and probably more important to be known for that than it was for stopping a nuclear power plant from being built out in Bodega Head. And part of that was the connection that all of those items had to the land that she loved so much. And she had a phenomenal collection. It was literally cataloged at over 350,000 pieces when she died. And there were things from huge arrowheads to mortars and pestles to little calendar items that had beads and arrows on them. And she loved to have the local school children come out and show them her collection, and she would pull out these drawers where she just had beautiful pieces that were cased in these glass frames, and she would have the kids come out and talk to them all about it. And generations of people went out there and saw her Indian artifacts, and she loved to share that information with people. One of the things that Rose Gaffney is noted for is her battle with Bodega Bay, with PG&E, over their wanting to take her beloved property out at Bodega Head. And this came up in the late 50s. PG&E decided they were going to build a power plant out at Bodega Head. And at the time, they didn't tell people it was going to be nuclear. But at that point, it didn't matter to Rose either way, because she was going to lose her property because PG&E had the right of eminent domain. She inherited from her husband the largest stretch of Bodega Head. It was over 600 acres, and originally PG&E was interested in about 400 acres for the use of the nuclear power plant, plus an exclusionary area around the plant in case there was any kind of accident. At one point it got negotiated down, and they decided that they only had to have 64 acres of it. She still wasn't happy about that and started a big ruckus, and this is a big woman who made big ruckuses. And so she started arguing in court with PG&E, and it started getting into the papers. And this is a little bit about how the story of the whole power plant started to become more knowledgeable to people in the area. And PG&E, because they had the right of eminent domain, was able to condemn her land and purchase it for her from her. But because of her battle, she ended up getting $1,000 an acre, whereas her neighbor, who sold to PG&E under the same ruling, only got $500 an acre because he did so without belly aching. So when PG&E decided that they were not going to build a nuclear power plant there, they were going to turn around and sell her land to the park system for $4,000 an acre. when she had only been able to get 1,000, she again sued them, took them to court, and she received the difference between the $1,000 and $4,000 per acre from PG&E. Some people in PG&E didn't like her that much, and when she was in the hospital towards the end of her life, one of them, who actually did have quite a bit of respect for her local PR guy, sent her some flowers, and she sent them back saying, "You don't need to send these to me, I'm not dead yet." So she had quite an attitude there.
Okay, it was 1962 that Pacific Gas and Electric Company decided that Bodega Bay would be the perfect place for the nuclear power plant.
It was 1958.
Well, that's when they started, this is a newspaper article. So.
Wait, it's not right, though. Because Joel Hedgepeth wrote the letter in 58.
Well, this is about Joel Hedgepeth. Oh, yeah, it started, well, in 1962, though, is when things started
escalating.
And now, this is after there's a whole generation of school kids after, you know, World War II that had been taught about the wonders of this magical, clean, cheap source of electricity. So it was a go. I mean, people were excited about it. And then there's the handful of people, Rose Gaffney, of course, at the helm, and Joel Hedgepeth, and a museum, San Francisco museum curator, Carl Cordham, and his brother, a young Cotati veterinarian named Bill Cordham. And then there was, you know, our wonderful Bodega Bay resident curmudgeon, Rose Gaffney. And then there was our hero, a Berkeley law student. I don't think he was a law student then, was he?
He was working for the...
Yeah, working for the Sierra Club. But later became a law student, later after that even a judge, and later after that even took PG&E to court 2 more times to stop them from building the nuclear power plant.
David Pessinen?
His name's David Pessinen. And then my particular favorite of all the characters is the Joel Hedgepeth, and he was a marine biologist and happened to be the director of the University of Pacific's Marine Station at Dillon Beach. And he was also the author of a marine biology textbook called Between Pacific Tides, I think it was. And this is a textbook that goes all up and down the coast, that is used in the colleges and mm-hmm. the curriculum. And the problem is, though, the local people at first thought it was a great idea, so they had to sway public opinion. And Pessinen's group were happy to use Rose Gaffney as kind of the figurehead because she could get away with stuff, you know, verbally and really rustle people up and ruffle feathers, and they quietly did the facts and figures underneath, and it was like this force that was like an earthquake almost, you know, starting to shimmy and shake, and things started to happen. So what I think what really started to happen was family and friends. You know, the whole Bodega Bay area started to draw together. People like Hazel Mitchell came to the fray. That's the waitress at the Tides restaurant. Mm-hmm. And also at this time, Hitchcock is doing his movie The Birds at what, 62?
63.
And he used Rose's house. How the story goes, he was driving by and his
location scout came up to her.
Limousine. Yeah, the location scout came into her little farmhouse. Was it the farmhouse out there? Right. And said, "Hey, Alfred Hitchcock is out in his limousine and would like to talk to you about using this house for a location." "Alfred who?" So Alfred was so enamored with her, he went in, and the whole crew ended up staying out there, and they did use it. And it's put Bodega Bay on the map even before, you know, this whole nuclear reactor debacle.
So when Tippi Hedren gets in the boat and rows across the bay to the big house that's out there where Mitch lives and Jessica Tandy, and that was Rose Gaffney's house with a false front on it. So she has a little claim to fame there as well.
It actually took all the way, even with all the court cases and whatnot, it took all the way up to 64 when the Alaska earthquake happened for PG&E to say, you know, I guess it's not really a very good site. But that's jumping ahead.
So in the late 50s, when PG&E decided that they wanted to build a power plant, they selected Bodega Head. Most facts say that they did know at the time they were planning to do a nuclear power plant, but it was not made public until about 1960, even though a lot of people were asking the question. The reason they picked the site of Bodega Head is because they could pull water in from the harbor and run it through the reactor plant and then spit out the used water on the ocean side. So it was a perfect location economically for them, and that's really why they chose that spot among a lot of options that they had. When they did look at that spot, it had already been spoken for by the California Park System, who had appropriated money to make that part of the California coastal system. And also the UC Berkeley was interested in it for a marine lab as one of the ideal locations that had been selected after they had done quite a bit of research looking for the best place to build a new marine lab. So both both the park system and UC Berkeley were interested in the land when PG&E came along. And so they dropped out of the picture, and because they wanted Rose's land, they took it by right of eminent domain. And she was the one who really started squealing about what was going on out there. And let's see.
When did the big balloon event take place? And describe that. That was a good idea.
It was an amazing thing. Actually, this whole event, the whole movement against PG&E and building a nuclear power plant out there, was the second anti-nuclear event in all of the United States. And it has become kind of the template for grassroots movements, and was one of the first time that these types of events had fun and music and things like that incorporated into it instead of just serious meetings. And a lot of fun was had. And one of the things that happened, there was a guy who's his name was Lou Waters, and he was a very big-time jazz musician in the late 40s. And while he was at the top of the charts, he just decided he wanted to quit before he became kind of just a has-been kind of a thing, even while he was at the top. And
I
he
think
disappeared.
It was the commercialism of it. He didn't like, you know, that he was supposed to be like a trained monkey and do what they demanded of him and not what he felt.
So he left the music business. So one day our group, which is called the Northern California Association to Preserve and Protect Bodega Harbor, that was the people who were fighting against PG&E.
We call them the hole in the head gang.
Mm-hmm. One day they were out at Bodega Head and they were trying to come up with an idea of what they could do. And this guy pulls up in an old truck and a plaid shirt, and he gets out and he says, "Well, I'm a bit of an amateur geologist. Maybe I can help you out." And somebody nudged David Pessnin, who was the leader of our group, and said, "Shh, don't you know who that is? It's Lou Waters." And David, being only about 24 or 25 at the time, didn't know who he was. And so they bring it up that he's a very famous musician who's gone into hiding, and they decide they're going to have a concert out at Bodega Head. He's going to come out of retirement and perform there for the first time in 17 years. And they had a great day. It turned out hundreds of people came, and they recorded the song Blues Over Bodega, and they ended up making a whole album from that, and the song Blues Over Bodega actually became a hit in the whole across the United States.
I'm going down to Bodega, Bodega by the sea, PG&E, what have you done to the scenery?
So at this event, the group decides they're going to have a big picnic out at Bodega Head and kind of just let people know what's going on with this power plant and try to get the word out there. So there's a PG&E PR guy who's out there in his truck, and he sees all these people coming and he just flees in despair. And the troops show up, they have an event out there, they play music, and one of the things that they did was they had 1,000 helium balloons, and each one had a tag attached that says this represents a molecule of radioactive fallout. If you find this, please contact your local newspaper. So they're out there in the afternoon, and they let these balloons go, and it's a typical slightly windy day out at Bodega Head, and they just start flying across the bay. And over the next week, they were found in San Francisco, Novato, Petaluma, and a cluster of them that were tied together landed in the fountain of City Hall in San Rafael. True story.
Oh my gosh. And there a lot of them were found in places that I've heard from folk that they're claims, but isn't that amazing? I mean, doesn't that get the picture to people? Hey, if there's a nuclear reactor here and there's an accident, that crap's going to come over here. It's going to get you. There's a city there. There's vineyards. There's dairies.
People.
There's, you know, there's people here.
Mm-hmm. And what happened, over 2,000 people wrote the newspapers and said, "What's going on up here?" And it really opened up people's eyes beyond just the Bodega Bay area. Mm-hmm. So that day and a lot of the things that happened in the whole course of fighting against the power plant out there became part of the template of grassroots movements from there on out. So we can be proud of that in Sonoma County.
There's a quote that was collected by Annette, and I'm going to read it. And it's Rose Gaffney, Rose S. Gaffney. What's the S for?
Schmidt.
Rose S. Gaffney.
Long ago, someone aptly observed that the greatest force in the world is public opinion. This has been amply demonstrated in the victory of Bodega Head, and Bodega Head stands as a monument to public opinion and all the folk who were aroused to take action to save it from exploitation. But most of all, to all those who worked hardest to arouse that protest, God blessed us with the victory. My thanks to all. Sincerely, Rose S. Gaffney.
There was a lot of struggles along the way during this whole thing, and the grassroots movement really kind of started building up in the early 60s, and the whole campaign ended in 1964. One of the final reasons was the earthquake that happened in Alaska, because PG&E was saying earthquakes really are not that detrimental. We don't need to worry about this power plant being built here. We can build it on ball bearings and it'll just shake with the earthquake. That was literally what they were saying. But what happened with the Alaska earthquake is it showed that, you know, earthquakes can be very devastating, and it really, that was the final nail. But before that point, there were a few nails in the coffin. And one of the great stories is the association, which was fighting against PG&E, was looking for somebody to speak out, like a geophysicist, somebody who could say that it's not a good idea to build a nuclear power plant on top of an earthquake fault. And because most of the people employed in that field were employed by people like PG&E, they didn't want to speak out. So there was a public meeting that was held in November 1962, and it was broadcast on KPFA in Northern California and rebroadcast in Southern California. And in one of the twists of fate, this gentleman is driving through Southern California with his radio on, and he hears what's going on and thinks it's terrible and comes up to join the cause. He happens to be Pierre Santhamond, who was the Navy's top geophysicist, and he had just come back from Chile, where he had been studying the devastating earthquakes that had happened there recently. So he comes up and he meets with Doris Sloan, who's the local secretary of the group, and says, "Is there something I can do?" And she says, "We've been waiting for somebody like you." So she and Pierre Santhamond get in her little car, and they're driving out to Bodega Head.
It's a dark and stormy night.
Stormy day. And they're thinking, what are we going to say to the guard? Because there was a fence and a perimeter around the whole construction site. What are we going to say to the guard that we want to get in there and take pictures? You know, he's never going to let us in. So they go out there, and it turns
God
out
is
because
smiling.
It's a rainy, stormy day, or what reason, the guard was not there.
So get a cup of coffee at the Tides.
They walk right in and take all these pictures, and she describes it great. She says the whole time he's going, oh, this is terrible.
Oh, terrible.
And he comes back and says, this is the terrible place to make an earthquake, a nuclear power. This is ridiculous. Well, he writes an official report that says, of all the places, this is literally one of the worst places you could build a nuclear power plant, and his credentials couldn't be discredited. So they brought this to the Public Utilities Commission, which was one of the nails in the coffin. And then another one was that PG&E kept saying, there's no problem, that it's not an earthquake fault. We've had all our geophysicists tell us this. You guys are just a bunch of, you know, you're getting crazy about this. Well, one of
the... We are the experts. You don't know.
Exactly.
Of course, all the experts were employed by PG&E.
So, not all the experts. There was one who went down into the reactor hole, because they actually dug the reactor hole. A lot of people don't realize this. Out of Bodega Head, they took 600,000 cubic yards of dirt out of the ground. It's 90 feet wide, and at the time it was over 100 feet deep. And they were digging down about 10 feet, excavating, and then they would reinforce the side walls of the reactor hole and then go down another 10 feet. Well, while they were excavating the side walls, one of the people that we talked with, Manny Piazza, who was working as a subcontractor for PG&E in the hole, and he goes, I'm not a tree hugger. I don't even believe in what you guys are doing, but I told them I saw the fissure in the wall. I'm like, what do you mean, Manny? What's a fissure in the wall look like? And he goes, it's a big black line. It goes over here, it stops, and a few inches over, it continues on the other way. I'm like,
it's been shaken.
So At some point, the United States Geological Team gets invited out because it's getting towards the end of the whole a course of events, and it's gotten to the point where people in Washington are hearing about what's going on, the ruckus out in Bodega Bay. So they send out the U.S. Geological Team to go down into the hole and take a look. And one of the best pictures that we have is their top guy pointing to the fissure in the hole of the reactor pit.
And what year is this?
This is in the middle of 64.
Okay, keep in mind, 9/11/58, Joel Hedgepeth wrote a letter to the Press Democrat saying, should there not be a thorough investigation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was another one of the nails in the coffin. But luckily enough, things were happening that at some point it got stopped. But I don't think any of those events by themselves would have stopped it. And all along the way, PG&E is continuing to go forward. They invested at the time $4 million, which was a lot of money in the early 60s. And they 4 years into production where they made the road going out to Bodega Head. They had dug the reactor hole. They were planning to go forward with no holds barred. So it was a pretty amazing fact that these people ended up getting together and stopping it from happening.
We'd just like to say that Annette discovered this story and we went to find out about it. And the important thing is, stories die unless people tell them. And the reason that we learned so much about this particular story is people opened their hearts and their minds to us and they told us their stories. And this is so important, but they were so busy doing it that they didn't have time to tell it. And now it's 50 years later and 40? 50.
40.
And exactly. We think the story needs to be told, and it needs to be told really, really well. And there's all these nuclear power plants all up and down the coast right now that are leaking and ugly and, you know, power lines and big smokestacks. And PG&E is thinking about, you know, cleaning them up and making them work again. And there's other power, you know, there's other ways. And these people showed us that, you know, this is our land. Let's keep it nice.
This is a great story about how people who really didn't have a lot in common, because there was Rose Gaffney, an older woman. There was Hazel Mitchell, who was a waitress at the Tides. David Pessinen, who was a young guy who got kicked out of the Sierra Club. This is interesting. He got kicked out of the Sierra Club because they told him to go report on this story about what was going on at Bodega Bay. And he came back and he said, reports to the board of directors of the Sierra Club saying, I don't think it's a good idea. They're building this on top of a fault line. And the head of the board of directors, his name is Richard Black, pointed his finger to him and says, you will not, in the name of the Sierra Club, bring up the safety issue of this being built on a fault line. And so he couldn't live with that, and he just said, this is too big of an issue. So he ended up leaving the Sierra Club and basically having no job and had time on his hands to become the coordinator to help this event get from just an idea of stopping it to actually, you know, closing the gates.
Kismet, destiny.
And what's really amazing to me is, having grown up in Sonoma and Marin County, I never heard of this story. And it really is a great example of people working together to make something very important happen. And had they not done what they did, there is no question there'd be the nuclear power plant there right now. And because most nuclear power plants have a 25-year lifespan, it would now be decommissioned and under concrete like a big sarcophagus out at Bodega Head instead of the beautiful park that we have there now.
As Edmund Burke said, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing.
And these people did a lot.
And as Carl Corden said, this could get a little noisy.
Yeah. So back to Rose Gaffney, because we're working on that other story in detail. But Rose, when she went to live in Bodega, in Salmon Creek, she was, as one of the people that we interviewed described her, in a town of characters, Rose Gaffney stood out.
I love that one.
And she is, she just said what she thought. She didn't put up with any guff from anybody. And a lot of people were terrified of her. When she had her property out at Bodega Head, she had a can on the fence, and kids would go out there and go abalone hunting or camp overnight. And there was a sign saying, put a quarter in the can. Well, she would come out first thing in the morning and go wake up those campers if they hadn't given their quarter and said, you've got a choice. You pay me now or you're going to church with me. Most of them paid her the quarter.
Everyone has their own personal wonderful stories. There's a fisherman. What is our fisherman?
Harold Ames.
Harold Ames.
Third generation Bodega Bay fisherman.
Oh, sliced bread. What a beautiful man. Been living next door to his sister for 50 years. Did they used to own the Tides?
No.
What was the, they used to own the grocery store? What was that?
No, it's a building across the street.
Oh, okay.
And her, Shirley Ames' father, I think, worked at the Tides.
Oh, okay, that's what it was. He tells the story where when they were kids, about 16, they went out there and, they, you know, they called her the Witch of Bodega, you know, and they would want to antagonize her because she was up to it. You know, she would carry a baseball bat. She had a shed filled with things she had confiscated from people,
fishing equipment.
I wouldn't be surprised if guns or whatever. And so they had gone out there, and she was at Horseshoe Cove, and they, you know, she was there, they were there, so, and she said, get out, and they started doing 360s around her, you
donuts
know,
going around,
yeah, donuts around her, and just got her into a lather. I mean, that was like the high point of their lives out there at Bodega. You know, not a whole lot happened, so to have somebody like the Witch of Bodega Bay, who is, in our terms, the Belle of Bodega,
yeah,
have a hero in
quite
your own.
Quite an angel to pick on PG&E.
Yeah.
I think she would have picked anybody who she didn't think was doing right.
Yeah.
We have
protect
this
land.
One saying, PG&E has met its match, and she wears a dress.
There's really some great PG&E stories. But Rose Gaffney, during the 60s, she still continued to, even up until the day, basically a few weeks before she died, she continued to walk the beach every day. And one of her favorite things to do was just find things out there, and she, during the course